Conservative Incorporated, Black Conservative Inc., the establishment Black conservatives, the ones who the Republican Party props up to just say their talking points. So in an effort to make more Black people listen to them, but it really doesn't work. It just makes white people point at them and be like, oh, look, there's one of the good ones. Like, there's those type of Black conservatives that are like up here like, Cardi B is ruining America. You need to pull up your pants and stop listening to rap music, which is just like boomer talking points that nobody actually really believes. Like, I don't think they actually believe that at all. And then there's Black conservatives who are down with Black culture. They know about Black culture. They respect Black culture and Black people's history in the country.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the show. We've got another great guest with us joining the podcast today. My friend and YouTuber and Fee fellow, too, now, Olivia Rondeau.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Oh, my God. It's so cool to be a Fee fellow now.
I know. So now she's working with us at the Foundation for Economic Education, writing articles and doing all that. But for folks who don't know, Olivia is big on social media. She's a YouTuber. She does streams. She does videos, all sorts of content. And she's very much like me on the libertarian side of the conservative spectrum. But she also comes from a much different walk of life than me and has some, you know, really unique experiences that she talked about. And that's kind of where I want to start today's conversation, Olivia. Can you just give us the origin story of your life, where you grew up, how you got involved in politics, and just give us, you know, the 60-second version of that?
Well, I'm born and raised outside of D.C. in Maryland. And as you know, being a conservative in the DMV area, it just doesn't exist. It doesn't happen. It's very unpopular. And then put on being a minority and being a woman on top of that. Again, it's just not something that is popular. It's not something that we do here. It's something that you'll get vilified for or teased over. It doesn't matter, like, if they're Black, white, whatever. Like, if you're conservative in general here in this area, you'll get teased for it. But I wouldn't say I was raised in a very, like, politically charged household. Like, I wouldn't say my upbringing was strictly, like, Republican or conservative. Because, actually, both my parents ended up voting for Obama, and then both my parents voted for Trump. Like, it was, I just grew up in a very, like, mixed, like, ideological household. It wasn't strict or anything like that. However, I do think I had a conservative upbringing, like if you take the politics out of it, because I grew up hunting, fishing, doing self-defense, you know, working for an allowance. It was like very based off of personal responsibility and doing for yourself and making your own decisions, take responsibility for your actions. So I feel like that translated well into me becoming, you know, a right winger later in life, because that was the emphasis of my childhood. You know, as middle schoolers do, you go on Tumblr, you have a brief phase of like liberalism or whatever, progressivism. You know, I was really, really stressed out about people's pronouns and how Trump was a racist for like a good year of my life when I was like 14. This really shows my age here. But during the 2016 election, I was 15, and it was kind of a turning point for me, because I was still in like my Trump is a racist phase, but I couldn't tell you how he was racist. Like, I couldn't tell you what specifically was bad about the Republicans at that point. I just knew that the left, the Democrats, Obama, you know, they were not racist. And that was like literally all I knew. And I went to a high school in a very rural part of Maryland. It was majority white. And there was some people who were supporting Trump there, you know, and I was very confused by that, because I wouldn't consider it a racist school. I didn't have a lot of racist experiences there. I like got along with the white people there. Like, no one really was trying to single me out the whole time or anything. But it really confused me why these white people who I liked were supporting Trump. And then I go home to my dad. I'm like, Dad, like, these crazy people are supporting Trump at school. Like, I thought Trump was a racist. And he's like, actually, I'm supporting Trump in this election. And my dad is Black. So I'm sitting here like, that really made me think. And, you know, we had this whole conversation about how, you know, he was like, well, what actually made Trump a racist? What actually made Trump like a white supremacist and neo-Nazi? All the I literally couldn't explain it. I was just like, I saw it online. I saw it on the news. That's what everybody else was saying. That's what my friends are saying. You know, my little group of Black friends at school, like the five of us at that high school, that's what they were saying. So, yeah. So from there, I, you know, decided to do my own research, do my own due diligence, and realized that Hillary Clinton, who was a front runner of the Democratic Party, she wasn't all that great. Like, she had a lot of racist tendencies. She had a lot of authoritarian crazy state is Tennessee's, and how this, I mean, I don't want to get too much into conspiracy here, but if you look at the history of Bill Clinton too, it's like really shady stuff. Like, it's really shady. So I was like, well, I cannot support the Clintons. Like, from right there on, I was like, I don't know who I'm going to support. I can't support the Clintons. That's it. And then, you know, as I learned more and more, and yeah, I watched the election unfold, and I watched the Trump campaign unfold, I started leaning more and more and more towards Trump, and realized I was going to identify as a conservative. I wasn't super open about it yet, because even though the school had some Trump supporters in it, because it was just a white rural school, and my little group of friends, like my group of Black friends, that was still like very unacceptable. And I ended up getting kicked out of the Black Student Union at my school. Yeah, it was like a whole dramatic, it was like a whole thing. But basically, it surrounded the topic of like hate speech and microaggressions and all that kind of stuff that I don't have time to care about it. I don't care about it. It doesn't affect my life. Like, I really don't care about it. But then I'm getting kicked out of Black Student Union. Like, literally one of like the 10 Black kids in the whole school got kicked out of Black Student Union because we disagreed basically on political issues. So that's a whole other story, but that kind of radicalized me. And so, then, yeah.
I want to ask you about something else too, because I know you're a wrestler, and you were a very competitive wrestler in high school, and now I believe in college, right? But that kind of ran you into the unwoke territory too when it
came
to, I know that you're a young person, you're Gen Z like me, right? As a conservative, you are very pro-freedom when it comes to LGBT, right? You are not anti-LGBT. But the idea of trans women who were born biologically male and retain many biologically male characteristics competing to in girls' high school sports, if they just decide one day to, that struck you as very unfair, and I think understandably so. But you spoke out about that, right? Can you tell us how that came to pass and what that was like and the backlash you ended up getting?
Yeah, so in the state of Maryland, there is no girls' high school sanctioned wrestling. When I began wrestling my freshman year of high school, I was on the boys' team. It was rough. Like, I can't stress enough how much of a difference there is between a biological male and a biological female, especially in combat sports. So my first year, I literally won one match. My first year wrestling, I won one match. My next year, after doing months of preseason training, off-season training, going to national tournaments, girls' tournaments, boys' tournaments, doing all the lifting and possible training I could do, then my sophomore year, I was actually decent on the boys' team. I had like a winning streak. And became very well known, like in my county, for being the one girl that was beating up all these guys. But then again, it was there still is a difference, because I was beating up guys in my county in Maryland, and sometimes from like occasional private school, which was like my peak, was when we would go up to like a private school, I would beat somebody. But take that into account, and then at my highest rank of high school, I was ranked third in the nation in girls' high school wrestling. So, yeah, I'm beating the guys in my county, but I'm not nationally ranked in male wrestling. So that kind of goes to show, like, a really, really good girl wrestler is going to beat some guys, but not the best guys. You know, the top guys are going to beat me, even at the top of my game. That's just how it is. So even me being forced to be on a boys' team, because there is no girls' team, can relate to that, because I'm not sitting here acting like I'm not an outlier in the situation. I know many, many women, many, many girls who would love to wrestle given the chance, but they know that they would get beat up on a boys team because not everybody can do it. Not everybody is tough enough to do it. And if you put me on like a male, like D1 college team right now, because I'm a collegiate wrestler on a women's team, I get my butt kicked. I simply get my butt kicked because there's a biological difference. And so fast forward to now, and I'm seeing, you know, in Connecticut, there's currently a lawsuit going on because the top two track winners who have amassed like 15 state titles since like 2017, 2019, they're both transgender females, biologically male transitioned to female. And now people are suing because it's like, it's only the biological females that are getting third, fourth, fifth place. And the top two placeholders are always these two trans girls, and they have an issue with it, and everyone's calling them transphobic. And their only issue is, well, we already know who's going to win because it's the two biologically male athletes who have the advantage. And people, I make videos about that all the time. I make articles about that. And people will call me a transphobe. And it's not out of bigotry. I want to reiterate, it's not out of bigotry. You can do what you want with your body. I don't hate anyone. I would never go up to anyone and bully anyone for looking different or being transgender or, having gender dysphoria. I believe it's a real mental health issue that I can't tell anyone how to deal with. I'm not going to sit here and say, you have gender dysphoria, but don't transition. Like, I can't tell anyone what to do with their body. So it's not about hatred or fear at all. It's literally about safety and security of women's sports. So I just wanted to clear up that misconception before anyone comes for me because they always do.
Well, and one thing about that is I think always a tell, because some people, and this definitely doesn't apply to you, but there are some people who attack the trans in sports thing, and they do so in a way that I think is transphobic, or they're constantly, exaggerating it. They're coming from a place where they genuinely are anti-trans, right? And that is some people in the conservative movement. But one thing that is always a tell for me is I also agree with you on women's sports, but I've always said that a trans female or a trans woman or trans girl, if we're talking high school, who is born, I'm sorry, a trans man, so a trans boy in high school is born biologically female, but then transitions to identify as male and man. That person, I have no problem with them competing in boys' sports if they want to. Because there's no disadvantage, right? If a born biologically female person chooses to go compete in the boys' sports and identify as a boy, they're not being unfair to anyone else. They're not hurting anyone else. If anything, they're only just putting themselves at a disadvantage. So for me, it's go for it, King. I don't care. With the trans female, it's a fairness issue, it's an equity issue, and it's not transphobic.
I agree. And people ask about this all the time because it's wrestling news and people, I know who this person is, and people always have a misconception that it's a person who transitioned from boy to girl wrestling females, but it's actually the other way around. But Mack Beggs, who is a transgender wrestler from Texas, won the Texas Girls State Championship because in Texas they have a rule that you can only wrestle your biological sex. So Texas has girls sanctioned wrestling. There's girls only teams, there's girls only tournaments in the state of Texas. Mack Beggs tr wanted to transition from girl to boy and wrestle boys, but Texas said, no, you have to wrestle girls because this is your biological gender, your biological sex. So Mack wins the girls state tournament and then goes on to college. And we actually were assigned to the same college for a while, but I decommitted, but not for the reason, like it wasn't about Mack. It was for academic reasons. I wanted to get a different degree. But we were actually about to be teammates, but now he, as far as I know, he's still at Life University down in Georgia wrestling men because they don't have that rule there. So it was a thing where he wanted to wrestle boys and Texas just didn't let him. So as far as I can see, he should have just been allowed to wrestle boys because he probably would have been at a disadvantage. He was a teenager and hadn't like fully like transitioned yet. So he probably would have actually been at a disadvantage. And now that he's wrestling men in college, I haven't seen his record. I honestly haven't seen him wrestle, but it seems more fair than just saying go with your biological sex, wrestle girls because, he's on hormones, so that wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, and it feels like Texas, by being super rigid and traditional and hard line about it, actually ended up forcing unfairness by forcing somebody who'd taken, transition stuff that made them have an advantage to still compete with the women. They were actually the ones in that situation hurting the women.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, it's such, that's why I say it's not a black and white issue. It's not just like make your own league for transgenders. I don't necessarily think that's the issue because how many of them are there in a particular sport, in a particular area, in a particular school system? I don't think there's enough to make a whole team or a whole division just for trans athletes. So I don't think it's like you can, it's there's a gray area there, I think. But the answer, whatever the answer is, it cannot be letting biological males who, regardless of their transition status, be in women's sports because people will say, oh, well, after X amount of years on estrogen, their muscle mass is depleted and they have the same muscle mass as a woman. Okay, you're still going to be taller, you're still going to have larger lung capacity, you're still going to have like longer limbs. Like there's a bunch of different advantages even if you have the same muscle mass as a woman. So it's like they don't, it's like the party of science doesn't want to listen to actual biological science.
I want to cut in and tell you guys about my friends over at Good Morning Liberty. Good Morning Liberty is one of my favorite podcasts. I listen to it all the time. They break down the top news stories of the day from a libertarian perspective and talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They also do a fun series every Friday, my personal favorite, Dumb Bleep of the Week, where they go over the dumbest highlights from the week that just passed. To check out the show, look up Good Morning Liberty on your podcast app, or just go to BernieLies.com, and that'll bring it up as well. BernieLies.com. Check it out today.
I want to shift gears slightly because, I mean, I think you made your first splash about wrestling and trans sports, but you've really, you talk about all sorts of things now. But one area where you've really developed a unique voice is talking about Black conservatism and Black voters in the GOP and criminal justice and race. And you talk about it in a way that I think is different from what, like, the most prominent Black conservatives do. Could you maybe highlight for us what you see as the state of Black conservatism in terms of the loudest voices, the best voices, and then we can kind of get into your own perspective after that?
Yeah, it's crazy that Black conservatism has kind of divulged so much. And it was basically, I would say there's probably two large camps of Black conservatism, maybe some subcamps around, but the two large camps is basically who I call Black Conservative Incorporated, Black Conservative Inc., the establishment Black conservatives, the ones who the Republican Party props up to just say their talking points. So in an effort to make more Black people listen to them, but it really doesn't work. It just makes white people point at them and be like, oh, look, there's one of the good ones. Like there's those type of Black conservatives that are like up here, like Cardi B is ruining America. You need to pull up your pants and stop listening to rap music, which is just like boomer talking points that nobody actually really believes. Like, I don't think they actually believe that at all. And then there's Black conservatives who are down with Black culture. They know about Black culture. They respect Black culture and Black people's history in the country, acknowledge racism and how it affects people and how it would impact people, you know, voting Republican, because people talk about all the time, well, how are these Black people voting Democrat 80%, 90% of the time, 95% of the time for Black women? And there are reasons for that other than Black people are just lazy and want a handout and are on the Democratic plantation. There are literal reasons for that would require them taking some type of responsibility. And so that's what I like to talk about. I like to talk about how the right can better reach Black people, because I think a lot of Black people are naturally conservative. People in my own family who vote for Democrats don't feel welcome in the Republican Party, but guess what? They're Christian, they're pro-life, you know, they don't want mass immigration. You know, they don't necessarily want full-blown socialism. Like, there are things that we can reach out to Black people on, even in the hood. I know that Republicans think that the hood is lost, or they're the urban Democratic strongholds, you can't take them over. That's why another part of the reason why Black people vote 90% Democrat, because a lot of times there is no Republican candidate in these districts. There is no Republican candidate, or there's not one being propped up by the GOP and giving funding, and they're not doing door knocking, they're not promoting themselves, they're just running for the sake of running, and they know they're not going to win. So there's a lot of reasons why I think that what I call conscious Black conservatism is necessary, because it takes into account some of these reasons, and I think it's more respectful to Black people. That's not to say that everyone has to be a conscious Black conservative. Like, you know, there are people who wouldn't consider themselves that. Like, I know, like, people like Ben Carson, who's one of, like, the most famous Black conservatives, and he just kind of goes with, you know, the Republican talking points, and that's fine and dandy, but he's also, I've never seen him be disrespectful to Black culture either, and I actually really like Ben Carson. So not to say that everyone has to fit into this one camp. I think there's space for both. But I think the main difference and the main change we have to make with certain, not individuals, just certain talking points on the other side, is you're not helping the cause at all. You're not bringing Black people into the party. You're not bringing the conversation of Black people. You're just demonizing them for your white audience. So I think that's where the divergence happened.
Well, and it's also, I like the word conscious in front of the Black conservatism, because it seems to me like you have two mainstream kind of, unfortunately mainstream, but two kind of concentrated groups of the way that, and this isn't just Black people, it's Democrats and Republicans and commentators more broadly, the way they talk about race. On the left, you have everyone is racist. Systemic racism keeps all minorities in chains. America in the 21st century, voting laws are Jim Crow. Microaggressions endanger people. You have this absurdly exaggerated, I think, condescending victimization narrative that I think is just totally disproportionate of the progress that we've actually made, and really serves mostly to kind of try to keep people needing them and needing the Democrats and feeling like they need to vote for them. But on the flip side, you have these too many Republicans, and this includes some of these like Black Ink commentators, right? Mm-hmm. No racism exists. Okay, maybe a little somewhere, but I never see anything. Back the blue, no matter who. Every police shooting is justified. That Black person shouldn't have been selling illegal cigarettes, right? Like, mm-hmm. And I guess maybe you have a third way. Tell us what that is, because those two narratives are honestly exhausting.
It's got to be somewhere in the middle, because both sides are exaggerating, but neither side is completely lying, I would say. Because, I mean, even the people on the right who say racism doesn't exist, they're the same people that are like, Democrats are the party of racism, Democrats are the party of slavery, Planned Parenthood is racist, you know, Jim Crow Joe is racist, the 94 crime bill is racist. All these Democrats are racist, but there's no systemic racism. Racism doesn't exist. It's not a problem. So pick a narrative, because you can't have both. And then on the other side of the aisle, they're demonizing white people. Black people can't be racist. White people are always racist. Everything is Jim Crow. Everything is oppression. Everything is systemic racism. Everything is a freaking microaggression. And again, that's not necessarily a lie. Those things do exist, but it's greatly exaggerated, because as you said, we've made tremendous progress. And I feel like if you talk to anyone that went through Jim Crow, if I talk to my own grandparents and say, hey, when you went through Jim Crow, was it like Georgia's voting laws? They're going to say no. Like I would never ask my grandfather that, because he would probably be offended and probably slap me. So that's a complete exaggeration, and I think it does a disservice to people who actually live through that and can live to tell the tale. And it's just absurd. Neither camp has that right. But what the conscious Black conservatives tend to do is acknowledge racism, acknowledge slavery and Jim Crow and how they have impacted Black people today. And that's another thing people on the right side of the aisle will say. There is no effect of that on Black people today. Look at Africans. They come here and, you know, they succeed better than Black Americans. What is the reason? There's clearly no racism. All that is proof that the systemic racism historically affected American descendants of slavery. I'm not saying any Black person from anywhere can come here and face the effects of having a lack of generational wealth because it was stolen from you for hundreds of years through the late 1900s, like that. Like all you're doing is proving that point. But what the left will do is say racism is the number one problem targeting Black people today. Every Black person, every brown person, every intersectionally politically correct minority is facing the same type of racism. Stop Asian hate, stop Latino hate, AAPI, by POC, like it's all intersectional, but that's not the case. Because an African or a Caribbean is not going to have the same experience in this country as someone who has been here for 400 years, as someone who has had their family and ancestors and parents been oppressed, because Jim Crow was not that long ago. Redlining was not that long ago. None of that was that long ago. So there is a disconnect there when the left is like, everything is racist. Black people have it so hard in life. And the right is like the complete opposite. There is a gray area. There is a gray area somewhere in there. And so I like to emphasize that and be like, okay, so you guys agree that the Democrats are racist, right? And you guys agree that racism exists and is holding Black people back. Well, let's find somewhere in the middle where we can say, look at these progressive policies, these big government policies, like licensing and regulation, like Planned Parenthood, because yes, Planned Parenthood is racist and does have a racist eugenic history. Let's look at actually how that affected Black people. Yes, finally Republicans care about the 94 crime bill. Oh, thank God. Like, let's talk about it. Let's talk about how criminal sentencing disparities affect Black people. Let's talk about how the war on drugs affects Black people. Let's find a common ground in the middle and start undoing hundreds of years of laws. Because just because no specific law in the book that says colors only or whites only does not mean that systemic racism or racism in general does not exist. That's a common theme I hear on Twitter or in online spaces whenever I speak about it. Well, show me the law where it says Black people can't do this. Well, I'll show you the disparities in generational wealth, because my grandparents weren't allowed to have a job in a certain area of town, own property in a certain area of town, go to school in a certain area of town. Are you going to tell me that's not going to affect their children, aka my parents, and not going to affect me? There's definitely a clear cut line there that a lot of people don't want to look at because it makes them feel uncomfortable and it would make the Republican Party, you know, take some responsibility. So I guess to reiterate again, it's somewhere in the middle. It's not like everything is racist. Black people have it so hard, and it's not, there is no racism. Black people have it so easy and they're lazy. Right. It's somewhere in the middle.
And the other thing too, that escapes this is, two things can be true at once, because the kind of left narrative would have you believe that basically all of the discrepancies are because of racism and the lasting effects of racism, and there's no personal choice involved, there's no right. personal responsibility involved. Yet on the right, many people would kind of bury their heads in the sand and say, nope, it's all about whether they choose to have children before wedlock or if they graduate high school, and no racism here, folks. That stuff that only happened, you know, to a couple decades ago doesn't exist anymore, so
yeah.
See, it's like the truth can be somewhere in the middle, and both can be true at once. And this is something that you shared on Twitter really recently that interested me. You did an HBO program, and you, the kind of like you call it black ink, right? The boilerplate, canned black Republican TM message does not seem to be very effective with actual black people. When you look at some of the most prominent and successful black Republican TM commentators, almost all of their fans and following are white people, particularly white boomers. And that's okay, but obviously they're not achieving the goal at reaching black people, bringing them over. But it seems like your kind of middle way message can do that. And so can you talk about the reaction that you got on that show and more broadly to your kind of nuanced view on these issues and your voice?
Yeah. So on the show, Pause with Sam J on HBO, I basically talked about what you just said, like how we can preach to black people about conservatism and be respectful and actually open up the door for that conversation instead of talking down to them constantly or trying to appeal to white Republican boomers constantly, because that's not the target audience, or at least it shouldn't be. And I got a lot of messages from black liberals, black Democrats, black independents, even black conservatives who just feel unheard in the Republican Party because they have the same concerns that I do. I literally got dozens of messages literally saying the same thing. Thank you for promoting conscious black conservatism, or thank you for opening my eyes to what black conservatism can really be. That was one of the main themes in the messages that I got, because it was a lot of messages from black liberals and black Democrats who literally admitted to me that they just thought that all black conservatives were sellouts or Uncle Toms, or just akin to anyone that just talks down to the black community constantly. Because Candace Owens was brought up in the show by Sam, because I asked her, I was like, well, who do you think about? What do you think about when you picture a black conservative? Because she said, I didn't seem like a conservative at all to her. I just seemed like a black person trying to figure the political thing out. Like, she couldn't put a label on it. And she was like, well, I think about Herman Cain and Candace Owens. And I'm not going to speak ill of Herman Cain. I actually didn't know much about him before he passed away, so I really can't speak to his brand of black conservatism. But I said, me and Candace differ in a lot of opinions, and this is no shade to her, but there is something to be said about how black people will react when they hear somebody talking down to them instead of talking with them. And I don't go around saying that black culture is degenerate and ruining black ruining America. I don't go around saying that Cardi B is like the end all be all to black culture. I just don't do that. And I think if you respect people, you have, you know, you catch more flies with honey. That's just it. Like you can't disrespect people and expect them to, you know, follow what you have to say. Now, a lot of black people actually do like what Candace says, and I used to be a really big fan of her. So this is not like it's again, it's not an end all be all, but I think that you're going to see a higher rate of people, you know, being open to right-wing ideas if you do be more respectful to them and honestly be honest about racism, because saying that racism doesn't exist or is not a problem. And I'm not saying Candace completely does this, but only emphasizing it when the Democrats do it, saying Democrats are the party of racism, when Republicans had lily white Republicanism and Southern strategy and currently are on that thin blue line kick, which I literally cannot understand for the life of me. Let's be honest about it. So I did get a lot of messages saying, well, thank you for saying that racism exists, you know, and this goes across the board, not even just on the show. Anytime I post a video, anytime I post a tweet calling out right-wing hypocrisy on racism, on black issues, on the black culture, I get a ton of messages in my DM. It's mostly in private from Democrats who honestly don't want to be seen as a stereotypical black conservative when they agree with a black conservative. So they send it to my private messages, and I usually don't post them, but I post the ones after I got off the show with Sam J, because it was just there was such a common core theme that I had to just share and make my point that pushing conscious black conservatism is going to open up people's eyes. It's not talking down to them. It's not saying all of your problems are your fault. Like it's, cause I don't want to write off black people as lazy. I don't know why people are so enchanted by doing that, but I just disagree with that strategy.
Yeah, and I guess if you could leave people with one message about conscious black conservatism, about your perspective, to take away from this that they won't hear from either, you know, the progressives or from the mainstream kind of ink establishment on the right, what would it be?
If you have disagreements with the progressives on capitalism or the free market or gun rights or abortion or religion or freedom or the lockdowns more recently or any of that, they will kick you out. They're going to call you a sellout. They're going to call you the same things they call me. Conscious black conservatism has a home for you. You don't have to pretend to be a liberal just to come with the Democrats because you think all the Republicans are racist. A good chunk of both parties are racist. I'm not going to lie. It's just, there's a lot of racism. I can't really qualm your fears about that. However, there is a home for you. I'm an independent. I'm not even a registered Republican. I have a lot of libertarian and liberty-leaning beliefs as well. There's a good discourse out there, because all of the self-proclaimed conscious black conservatives, we don't all agree on everything. It's not a party. It's not an official like group with set rules, with set beliefs. It's just people, black people, who consider themselves to be on the right wing of things, saying that, you know, coming up with better solutions than what the Republican Party and what the mainstream black conservatives have had to offer. So there is a space for you if you're, you know, an independent or maybe not even consider yourself a conservative or Republican, but disagree with the Democrats in some of those issues. I feel like I have a very plain, like, palate. Like, I don't know. Oh, recently I started eating tomatoes. I didn't eat tomatoes for, like, all of my life until, like, the past 6 months. I don't know if that's, like, very controversial. I hate them. I've been forcing myself to eat them. Like, I'll eat, like, a small, thin slice on a sandwich and just call it a day. But if, like, I will never eat, like, a grape tomato. Like, those are the sure small ones. Cherry tomatoes, I'll never eat that, or I'll never just buy into that. That's disgusting. So oh, also, I don't like avocados. I like guacamole, but not like you older Gen Z. I don't even think you're Gen Z. Honestly, Brad, I think of you as a millennial, but I'll never eat like avocado toast, like just a slice of avocado. I hate that.
You're only half a white girl, so you don't like avocado.
I agree with you on the iced coffee thing, though. I think that iced coffee is for the gays. I love iced coffee. I love Starbucks. I don't know if I have anything that's so super controversial, though. You honestly, you have the worst food takes of all time. You need to tell your followers to come look at my live stream with you, because you literally dipped a banana in ketchup and ate it instead of tasted like a sweet hot dog. So
yes, I literally did on her live
stream. That was disgusting.
I was dared to buy someone with a super chat, and I dipped a banana in ketchup and I tried it, and it was not bad. That's
no one favorite. Forced you to say it tasted like a sweet hot dog. That wasn't what they picked.
My job is only to say the truth.
That is literally horrid. Like,
so if anybody disgusting. Wants to, I will put the link to that live stream in the description and to Olivia's YouTube channel and her social media, where you should definitely follow her and check out her work. Olivia, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.